Russia continues shelling civilian areas in the Donetsk region, says Ukraine's military.
The enemy continues measures to replenish losses.
Plus, the State Department says Russia is paying a big price for its battlefield gains.
We have seen Russia make some incremental advances, but they have done so at a heavy cost.
And later in the program, some wounded Ukrainian civilians are making their way to the United States to have lost limbs replaced. Today is Wednesday, July 6th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Herman. Ukraine's army says Russian forces have been shelling civilian infrastructure in the Kramatorsk area in the Donetsk region. Military spokesman Alexander Stupin said Wednesday fighting continues in that region, as well as around Slovyansk, Kharkiv, and other areas, with the Russians firing shells from helicopters, tanks, mortars, and cannons, as well as launching rocket artillery.
Ukrainian soldiers harshly repressed the invaders' attempt to advance in the direction of Lazava. The enemy continues measures to replenish losses. Ukrainian strike aviation continues to attack the enemy in several strategic directions. Yesterday, bombers and attack aircraft of the Air Force of the Armed Forces of Ukraine destroyed two field ammunition depots, two platoon strongholds of the Russian invaders, and more than 10 units of the enemy equipment.
Russia, meanwhile, is claiming to have destroyed two advanced high-mobility artillery rocket systems supplied to Ukraine by the United States and their ammo depots in eastern Ukraine. The Russian Defense Ministry says the attack took place near the front line in a village south of Kramatorsk, the main focus for Russian troops following their capture of Luhansk over the weekend. The Russian Defense Ministry has released video that it says shows the strike. VOA News has not been able to independently verify the authenticity of the imagery. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden is signaling it will participate fully at this week's foreign ministers meeting of the Group of 20, alongside Russia's foreign minister, where the topic of Ukraine will again take center stage. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will attend that G20 foreign ministers conference on the Indonesian island of Bali. More from VOA's Anita Powell at the White House.
Ukraine will dominate discussion as foreign ministers from the world's 20 wealthiest nations set the stage this week in Bali, Indonesia, for the G20 summit in November. But the top U.S. diplomat does not plan to sit down with his Russian counterpart to try to negotiate an end to the four-month conflict. State Department spokesman Ned Price.
I'm not in a position to walk through the choreography. But I would certainly not expect any meeting between Secretary Blinken and Foreign Minister Lavrov.
The Kremlin says Russian President Vladimir Putin will participate in the November summit, hosted by Indonesia, and G7 leaders said they would as well. VOA asked the White House if a negotiated settlement was possible by then. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
But what we have seen from President Putin is he is not in a place or has no desire to negotiate. So going to your first question now is our approach has not changed. We are going to continue to support Ukraine. We're going to continue to help Ukraine fight for their democracy, fight for their territorial integrity.
Russia is also dug in, as is Ukraine. This determination, says analyst Mark Kansian, portends a long conflict. And he adds, it's further complicated because Russia has something the U.S. wants. For 4 months, Russian authorities have been holding American basketball star Brittany Griner on drug charges. The U.S. says she has been wrongfully detained.
There are always U.S. citizens being held by foreign governments. Most of them don't get a lot of attention because it's, you know, routine transgressions of local law. Some of them get a lot of attention, as Griner has. Eventually, we'll make a deal. I mean, one of the problems with all the attention, though, is that makes the price get higher. So in other words, you know, the Russians may get more in exchange for her release.
So now what? After 4 months, tens of thousands of deaths, millions of displaced civilians, several high-profile summits and continuing diplomacy, The conflict in Ukraine demonstrates a fundamental truth. War is hard. Finding peace may be harder still. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Speaking ahead of the G20 meeting that runs from Thursday to Friday, Germany's foreign ministry spokesperson Christian Wagner says it will neither be a normal summit nor business as usual. Germany holds the presidency of the group of seven industrialized nations, and Wagner says it will coordinate in Bali about how to respond to Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov amid the war in Ukraine. Despite its fresh military gains in Ukraine's Donbas region, Russia is paying a heavy strategic price. That's according to State Department spokesman Ned Price, speaking to reporters Tuesday in Washington.
We said consistently that this would be a conflict that would not be linear in terms of how it would play out. Right now, you are seeing Ukrainian and Russian forces trade territory in the Donbass. We have seen Russia make some incremental advances, but they have done so at a heavy cost in terms of personnel, a heavy cost in terms of their supplies as well. But what we do know is that this has already been a strategic failure for Russia. When this started on February 24th, Vladimir Putin went into Ukraine, we think, with every intention of being the de facto leader of Ukraine within a matter of days, if not a matter of hours. And you have seen those objectives thwarted. You have seen Ukrainians stand up to defend their country, to defend their freedom, to defend their democracy. And you've seen them do that with a massive amount of security assistance from the United States, nearly $7 billion from the U.S. alone since February 24th, and nearly $7 billion since the start of the conflict on February 24th. With dozens of allies and partners standing up and providing sums for security assistance and providing supplies as well.
Spokesman Ned Price at the State Department. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Herman. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, is calling for an end to the war in Ukraine and for perpetrators of atrocities and crimes in the conduct of that war to be held accountable. The High Commissioner presented her latest update of the situation in Ukraine to the UN Human Rights Council on Tuesday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner's report covers the period between February 24th, when Russia invaded Ukraine, and May 15th. The report presents an exhaustive tally of killings, widespread destruction, arbitrary detentions, forced disappearance, and other gross violations of human rights. In reviewing this list of atrocities, Michelle Bachelet noted the unbearable toll of the conflict in Ukraine continued to mount, adding that civilians bore the brunt of the ongoing hostilities. She accused Russia, and to a lesser extent Ukraine, of violating international humanitarian law, or IHL.
The high numbers of civilian casualties and the extent of destruction cost to civilian infrastructure continue to raise significant concerns that attacks conducted by Russian armed forces are not complying with IHLO. While on the much lower scale, it also appears likely that Ukrainian armed forces did not fully comply with IHL in eastern parts of the country.
Bachelet said the United Nations has documented more than 10,000 civilian deaths or injuries across Ukraine, adding the actual figures are likely to be considerably higher. She said most of these civilian casualties were caused by explosive weapons, including cluster munitions, in populated areas.
Even though the civilian toll from such weapons used in the manner they have been has become indisputable, Russian armed forces have continued to operate the same way, with predictable consequences on the civilian population and its infrastructure.
Speaking on a video link from Kyiv, Ukraine's first Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, Emin Zaporova, told the council that Russia's missiles, bombs, and projectiles claimed the lives of innocent Ukrainians daily. She said the officer of Ukraine's prosecutor general has registered more than 20,000 crimes of aggression and war crimes committed by Russian forces.
The attacks on the shopping mall in the city of Kremenchuk, which killed dozens of innocent civilians, has no justification from a military perspective. It was a clear-cut terrorist attack. We urge international human rights and investigative mechanisms to provide their objective assessment of all Russian crimes.
First counselor at the Russian mission in Geneva, Evgeny Ustinov, accused the High Commissioner of spreading lies and rejected the report as part of a disinformation campaign against Russia. He said the High Commissioner's office had become an accomplice in the crimes of the Kyiv regime and its Western sponsors. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres sent a pre-recorded video message on Tuesday to the Ukraine Recovery Conference meeting in Lugano, Switzerland. Guterres told the group the UN is working with the government of Ukraine to mitigate the threat of unexploded ordnance, landmines, and cluster munitions, and is preparing the groundwork for the reconstruction and repair of critical infrastructure. The Secretary General's spokesman, Stefan Dujarric, told reporters the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs is on the ground in Serhivka, where a residential area was attacked last week.
More than 130 people have been displaced, according to local authorities and our partners. Humanitarian assistance is being mobilized by the government and our partners. In total, some 2,000 people living in the area have been affected. Our partners have supported families with food and critical household items. Over the weekend and yesterday, we received disturbing reports of heavy hostilities, once again killing and injuring and many civilians on both sides of the front lines in Donetsk Oblast. Hundreds of houses and other civilians' infrastructure were reportedly hit in recent days, including the water system in Slovyansk. People in Slovyansk and Kramatorsk in government-controlled areas, where we just distributed humanitarian aid a few days ago, have experienced a particularly difficult weekend that prompted the mayors of both cities to ask citizens to leave and seek safety elsewhere. In non-government controlled areas, the situation is also dire, with intense attacks reported in the last 48 hours. Our work to save lives in Ukraine continues. More than 10 million people have received some kind of humanitarian assistance across the country, above the initial target of 8.7 million people.
Until February 24th, when Russian President Vladimir Putin sent his troops into Ukraine, the Cold War was encapsulated as a dark period that had been relegated to the past of European history. The new divide between Moscow and the West is showing no signs of healing, and some analysts say the current state of relations signals the start of a new Cold War. Marcus Harton narrates this report from Moscow.
More than 4 months after the start of the Russian offensive on Ukraine, the world has changed, and Russia is once again at odds with Western powers. As the Russian leadership is portraying it, the ones who have raised this new Iron Curtain in Europe are the countries of the Atlantic Alliance after their recent summit in Madrid. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Alexander Grushko.
It seems to me that the best conclusion we could make is that NATO in Madrid accomplished an evolutionary about-face in its development after having been founded in 1949 and came back to its roots, i.e. to the principles of providing security, military security, dating back to the Cold War time period.
Isolated from the international scene, the Russian president now seeks to strengthen the few allies he has left, especially with the Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko. The two have a plan for unification, which Mr. Putin contends the West is actually helping achieve.
Unprecedented political and sanctions-related pressure exerted by the so-called collective West is pushing us to expedite the process of integration.
In a divided Europe, the possibility of Ukraine and Moldova, former parts of the Soviet Union, ending up joining the Western Bloc, specifically the European Union, is also a matter of concern for the Kremlin, though analysts say NATO is Moscow's main fear. Andrei Kortunov is Director General of the Russian International Affairs Council, a Moscow foreign policy think tank.
The Russian leadership is mostly concerned by the deployment of the hostile military infrastructure on the territory of these countries. But since the European Union is not a strong player in the field of security, the rapprochement of Ukraine with the European Union should be less of a concern for the Kremlin than the rapprochement of Ukraine with NATO.
On the streets, sentiments about the Atlantic Alliance are often negative.
We are not aggressive, but you, NATO, do not occupy our space, let us put it like that. Putin is quite correct in stating that we do not touch you, and you, NATO, do not touch our borders.
But there are those who, after making sure that we are not from Russian state television, say otherwise.
I do not consider NATO hostile, neither do I consider it as targeting against Russia. I think this is a club of interests. Let us put it like that. I do not see any threat in it for Russia.
Life goes on in Moscow, while day by day more people believe a new Iron Curtain seems to be stretching across Europe, a second Cold War, or perhaps simply the old Cold War that never quite disappeared. Marcus Harten, VOA News.
The Speaker of Russia's lower house of parliament is now referring to Ukraine as a terrorist state. The remark on Tuesday by Duma Speaker Vyacheslav Volodin is viewed as an escalation of Moscow's war rhetoric. Analysts say this language advances potential justification for a broader assault by Russia, perhaps on the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv again, or a renewed attempt by Moscow to topple Ukraine's government. As we mentioned earlier in today's program, Ukraine says Russia has been dropping shells again on the Kramatorsk area. When Russian forces fired on a crowded railway station in Kramatorsk on April 8th, 59 people were killed and 109 others were wounded. But one mother and daughter survived, and they are going to the United States for prosthetics. Omelian Oshudyak has the story for VOA.
After 2 months spent at Lviv Hospital with her daughter Yana, Natalia Stepanenko can't hold back tears. Her wounds are severe, but doctors say there's hope.
Modern high-tech prostheses will ensure full functioning of their feet. They will be able to walk, move, take care of themselves, run and dance. Kids will be able to live life to the fullest.
Twins Yana and Yaroslav are 11. They and their mother Natalia Stepanenko are residents of New York, a village in the Donetsk region.
When you look at pictures on Instagram, our bus station has been destroyed. Only 3 stalls are still open at the market. In Petrunki, in the neighboring village of Novoselivka, there's only 1 person remaining there now. Everything is destroyed. My mother died there on March 22nd.
On April 8th, Stepanenko with her 2 children and their belongings arrived at the Kramatorsk railway station. They were waiting for the evacuation train when a Russian rocket hit the station. 109 people were wounded, 59 died, including 7 children. Natalia and Yana both lost legs in the bombing.
I heard weird sounds, like something was flying and whistling. I noticed everyone on the platform sat down. Then it all went dark, and suddenly I couldn't hear with my ear. Then I opened my eyes, and I felt a burning sensation in my legs. I tried lifting my legs, but I couldn't see them. And then I realized I don't have them.
Yaroslav was inside the station building. A policeman called me and said, "Your son is here, come pick him up." And I was still lying on the platform. So I said, "How can I do it? My legs have been blown off." So the policeman took him to his home.
The Stepanenko family was brought to Lviv by a medical train, made available thanks to Doctors Without Borders. In Lviv, Yana and Natalia underwent several surgeries, including reamputation. And 11-year-old Yaroslav began their unfailing caregiver.
He grew up considerably in this time, so if he was 11 when it happened, he's like 22 now.
After a month in the hospital, Natalia Stepanenko is trying to keep her kids positive.
You have a guardian angel, and so do I. How many children were left without limbs because of the war? And they will live and grow, and so will you. Everything will be fine.
Fine, but not easy. The family members headed to the United States to be fitted with prosthetics and undergo rehabilitation to learn how to walk again. Omeljano Strudlak for VOA News, Lviv, Ukraine.
Bulava is the name of a volunteer organization created by young Ukrainians in the Washington, D.C. area after Russia invaded Ukraine. The group is collecting funds and necessities for those who need it most back home. We have details from Maxim Moskolkov in Washington, reporting for VOA.
The founder of Bulava, Darya Pach, is originally from Ukraine and has been living in the United States for the past 9 years. She says when Russia invaded her homeland, she knew she had to help. So she boxed some basic necessities and sent the package, as she put it, to nowhere. She wanted to send another one, but this time asked some friends to help.
And at one point there were 12 of us, and we decided that this is the moment to organize a team that will not only just sell merch or just help Ukraine, but which will continue to help rebuild Ukraine.
Bulava, which means mace or club in Ukrainian, is made up of a few volunteers originally from Ukraine, who live in Washington and the surrounding area. Most are young professionals, a nurse, an entrepreneur, a photographer, an IT specialist. Each Wednesday they hold a fair where they sell products with Ukrainian symbols. Many designs are inspired by the drawings of Ukrainian children. The group also holds large charity events to help targeted groups in Ukraine.
We do work with a few nonprofits and few organizations in Ukraine, as far also with a lot of volunteers. And since like a lot of big funds, Ukrainian funds, they help big organizations. So we're trying to fulfill the small orders and the small groups.
So far, Bulava has collected $38,000 in cash, as well as medicines, personal protective equipment, baby food, and more than $80,000 worth of clothes. The medications are handled by a head nurse at a Washington area hospital. Ekaterina Kashlaba has garnered help from hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, and doctors in private practices.
I, in principle, accept different orders from hospitals in Ukraine. We filter them. I'm looking at what's possible, what's impossible to get here. For example, we had a request from the cancer center in Mykolaiv. We were able to get them what's called bone marrow biopsy kits.
Bulava volunteers say as the war drags on, it has become more difficult to raise funds. So they're constantly looking for new ways to get help to those living through a war back home. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
That's all for today's program. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world, 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on our social media platforms, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team here at the Voice of America, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman. Have a good night.
This is the Voice of America, Washington. Ba 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 zip, D.C.